This is Vince McCauley.
This is Coach Creon of the Surrey Scorchers.
This is Scott Melvin, CEO and co-founder of Buzz 16.
This is Rodney Glasgow for the Sheffield Sharks.
This is Kennedy Leonard from the London Lions.
And you're now listening.
And you're listening.
And you're listening.
And you're listening.
To the BBL Show.
To the BBL Show.
To the BBL Show.
To the BBL Show.
Enjoy the BBL Show.
This is episode 3 of the Summer Road Trip here at the BBL Show. I am Jay Marriott. He is Drew Lasker. Today, Mr. Lasker holds it down and goes one-on-one with former London Lions, Isaiah Reese. How are things with you, sir?
I'm in the land of the free, man, where the weather is shining and the beer is cold and the people are, the people. But anyway, how are you, man? What's going on? We're on this road trip, so we're going to be all over the place. So you might as well get ready for it, people.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I've got a great story for you guys. Super quick. Decided to come home last night. Tire blew out. Got stuck somewhere. Luckily, had a friend where it was. Stayed over. Got the tire changed. Got back at 10 a.m. Tons of work today. So finishing off with this podcast before I sit down with the family is great. I'm looking forward to it.
Wow, man. So why did you have to wait? Do you not know how to change a tire, man? That's car 101.
No, the van, so I've got a big van. The van didn't have the necessary equipment, so we had to go get it in the morning. So I can change a tire, guys, even a Ford Custom Transit. Thank you very much.
Well, I will say this. For a man that travels up and down the country consistently, get your stuff in order, man.
I have been told. But anyway, let's get this episode started with your social media spy. It's the Marriott Minute. Okay, Cheshire Phoenix with a statement sign-in of Brit Danny Evans, joining for his first season in the BBL. The BBL and WBBL officially launched their ambassador project designed to inspire the next generation and address mental health using the stars of our courts. Sheffield Sharks bring some huge news to the table as they announce their new home, the Park Community Arena. Great news for the club and league. Squad numbers are released for Coach Rob's testimonial this weekend with announcements that Coach Atiba Lyons and former coach Nigel Lloyd will be at the helm. Against him, it is Riders versus the rest of the league. It's going to be epic. The legend that is Zaya Taylor, who will be playing in that game fresh off retirement, will be taking the helm at Werthing Thunder. Fresh off a rebrand for the club. Check that one out. It's looking pretty cool. With first edition, Orlan Jackman, another former BBL standout. A new format for the league has been hinted at with teams due to play each other 4 times. Returning to a format both myself and Drew has experienced before, so we'll get Mr. Lasker's thoughts later. Hennessy and the NBA have sent a floating basketball court down the Thames. Coach Mark Stugall has made a statement of intent by saying his Eagles need to be competitive right away. Can they bounce back to former glory after missing the playoffs? And lastly, I know Twitter came alive when LeBron James hinted at doing a podcast, but we can confirm we turned him down until he gets a stronger association with British basketball. And that's this week's Marriott Minute. I'm always watching.
Sorry, people, to disappoint you. It was a tough decision turning down LeBron James, but he's not ingrained in the basketball community. He's in the football community as he's, 10% stakeholder in the Liverpool football team. But yeah, but, maybe next time. Maybe next time. We don't need him for this show, but good minute, man. But yeah, let's move on to hot topics, where the only topic that we got to touch on is obviously this new format. So like you mentioned in your minute, Jay, we both have played in there. And I'll just start off by saying I love it. I love it. I loved when I first came into the BBL, I think it was like a 33 or 36 game regular season, and playing everybody home and away twice. And so I just feel like there needs to be, if something has to sacrifice on the schedule, it's the cup. There needs to be more league games, less cup games. And I saw a little bit of chatter on there on Twitter with people wanting everything to happen overnight. But one step at a time, guys. And this is a great step in the right direction. The next step, hopefully, will be the playoffs. And I didn't get to read the article, so I'm not sure if they put in how the cup is going to be ran. But that just needs to be like a one and done. We don't need to be playing 9 games to see what 4 out of 5 teams make it through. So I'm glad they were able to clean that up. But up and up, British Basketball League. What were your thoughts about it, Jay?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it when we were involved in it. I think I did it as a player and as a coach. So I like the format. I think at the moment, whilst we're trying to figure out what these franchises look like for 777, looking for those new additions, having more games is going to be a positive for the league. I think it's going to create more rivalries as well, because we're going to get to see a little bit of a rerun. And that's what I liked about it, actually, is that there was some revenge in there, either for us or against us when I was playing and coaching. I agree with you around the cup competition. Still like to see that Division One edition and maybe go towards like a little footballing side of things, like a little FA Cup type run, so you don't bring your bigger teams in till later, but just one big main competition that we can really, really focus on. And yeah, let's see what the playoffs hold. I always think it's really easy for all of us to talk about the formats, but I would absolutely, one job I never would want is trying to figure out how these formats should run, because you're never going to keep people happy and there's always going to be some flaw in there. But, you know, hey, I think until we add extra teams, because I think that's what's missing at the minute. I think we need more teams and some, you know, some more good franchises, but that seems a little ways away. So until we get that, let's get the extra games and make sure that we're seeing more British basketball. Great job.
Yeah, absolutely. But I want to touch on your point about the cup competition. So you want to see Division One teams in the cup and the trophy?
No, I just want one cup competition. I think
that
there's no need to rehash it. I think let's have one cup competition, focus on the league, and then if we want those extra games, give them in the playoffs. You know, give us some juice in the playoffs. That's what I would do, because I think sometimes it depends where you want to put the cup. You know, I'm sure that's going to be where we digress, because having it at the start of the year is kind of cool. I like it. You know, I liked it for the WBBL this year. It was a good way of us kind of having an extended preseason, because, you know, here in the UK, you just got to hit the ground running, right? You know, not many teams are getting big, long preseasons under their belt. You know, I remember playing in Spain and playing something like 20-odd preseason games. You know, we just don't do that over here. So, I think just one and have it just be massive, you know, just go all out.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that point. At this point, what is the purpose of having the trophy and the cup? Yeah, that's a good point there. I like to see it condensed as well. And if teams need a little cash flow, let's make the season 40 regular season games. You know what I mean? Just one other thing before we move on. I can't remember. How did we determine the tiebreaker when there were four games? Was it score, or was it that you go by the opponent above? That's one thing, one question that I've been pondering that I just can't remember.
I can't remember that either, if I'm honest. I think points, but I'm not sure. It was a long time ago. But, you know, I think from the rivalry perspective, that's the way that I look at it. So, yeah, they maybe need to clean that up a little bit. But like I said, I'd hate to do that job. How do you figure that out?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is Hot Topics. And let's forward this show on and get closer to our guest, Isaiah Reese, Mr. London Lions. But let's start with the little Lasker look back. In this episode of the Lasker Look Back, I had the pleasure of interviewing Isaiah Reese, and what a great interview it was. Very candid. Got to see another side of Isaiah. We touched on a lot of great points, and one thing that I learned about him is that he's an underdog, just like myself, like you, Jay. He wasn't a five-star recruit. This guy had no scholarship offers out of high school, ended up having to go the prep school route and share stories about Steph Curry and his time with the G League. So a very exciting interview that we have to look forward to. So without further ado, let's get the man of the hour in the room, Mr. Isaiah Reese.
Great look back, Mr. Lasker. Let's do it. Let's get him in the room as you go one-on-one with former London Lion, Isaiah Reese.
Isaiah Reese, my man, it is good to finally get you in the building, man. How are you?
I'm good. You?
I'm good, man. How your offseason been so far?
It's been good, man. Just doing tour days, just in the gym for real, and just trying to get better every day at a time.
Yeah, man. Well, this is my favorite part of the year, is that off-season grind, man, and being able to just kind of reflect on what you need to continue to hone in. But it's a lot of things that I want to touch on today. We've been wanting to get you on here for a while, but the timing is right now that you're not locked into a season. But before we start, I just want to touch on obviously you're from Miami, Florida, and when you speak to a Brit, their favorite two holiday destinations or most common is New York and Florida. So their perspective of Florida, mostly it's Orlando, is the touristy side. So just give the fans some insight onto what life is like, was like for you growing up in Miami.
I mean, it's real. It's kind of like New York or, you know, the UK or London, I would say. Like, it's really, really diverse. You kind of have, like, all backgrounds. You got the Caribbean, you know, African-Americans, you know, you got Jewish. Like, it's real, 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 real diverse. So growing up, it was just cool, man. I mean, playing basketball out here. It's mainly like a football, because there's a lot of pros in the league from football. And then it's also baseball. So it's like we're like the third sport, but it was fun, man. Just growing up out here, I loved it.
Yeah, you hit on it. Miami is definitely known for its baseball players and obviously its football players, just like here in Texas. But so how did you get introduced to hoops?
So originally I started playing baseball, which I don't know why, because I swear if my mama would have put me at football, I would have played age. I would have been like that. I'd be in the league right now. But so I started playing baseball. I don't know what happened. I missed the game. I missed the championship game. I think I might have failed it, like failed something. So I got that was my punishment because I got an F on the test, something like that. So I was like, man, you know, I'm not playing baseball no more. And then, like, I want to say, like, I was in PE in, like, the fifth grade. And the coach saw, like, that I was more talented than everybody else. And then he kind of introduced, and he saw that, introduced me to, like, this Boys and Girls Club. And ever since then, it kind of took off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what a turnaround. And what I mean by the turnaround is just looking you up and researching you. I was just really surprised of your basketball journey. You know, especially playing for the London Lions, a lot of fans just probably assumed that, you know, you was a five-star high school athlete. You were getting recruited by all these schools. But you were literally recruited by one school, and that was Canisius. Yeah. So, you know, just how did they end up getting into the picture?
So, I want to say, like, my first offer in 10th grade was from FAMU. So I'm thinking, like, this 10th grade is early. But then that coaching staff got fired, and then every, like 10th, 11th, 12th grade year, it was like always in and out. Like they messed with me, but it was like they wasn't really sure. So then whatever, we win the state championship. I ended up going prep school. So when I go to prep school, I had like five schools. I played like unsigned seniors. It was five, like UIC, Chattanooga, another school in Chicago. It was the, like Army. It was like five, like they were really heavy because I'm going into prep school. And as that season goes by, and it shorted down again, and it was just Chattanooga. So mind you, they were really heavy on me, like the whole staff. Like the only one I wasn't was kind of like the head coach, but they were trying to, the rest of the staff, like I spoke to the whole staff. And like 2 days, they set up a visit, like 2 days before the visit, I'm at home, because we're on like winter break. I'm at home, we're getting ready to go on this visit. And like 2 days before they called me talking about, hey, we signed somebody else. And I was like, I was really heartbroken because I was like, man, I went prep school, this is my time, like I'm about to go D1. And the worst part about it, it ain't on like no hating, but the dude they signed was up the street and from Miami. So it was like, wow, like out of everywhere in the world, like we talking about somebody that played against, so you know what I'm saying, like growing up. So whatever, they end up signing him. And then we go into, it's like June now, fast forward, June, July, I signed to a JUCO. And then like a week later, one of the assistant coaches on that staff ends up getting a job at Canisius. And I was like the first call. I was the first, he got the head coaching job and I was like the first dude he called. And then I went to Canisius. That's how that happened.
Man, that's crazy. That sounds very similar to my experience, because going into my senior year, I had zero offers. After I graduated, I was going to go to a JUCO, who was my only offer. And then I ended up getting a call real late out in Cali. And that was my only real situation. So when you think about that, like someone who, you know, aspired to play basketball at a very young age, and I'm assuming that that journey was a lot different than you expected. You probably, like me and every other kid, you expecting big D1s, you expecting all of these schools to come knocking on your door. So was there a time that you like felt to a point that you wanted to give up or quit? Or how was that time with you when that recruiting process didn't go the way you expected it?
So this is what I will say, like, so growing up in Miami, since it's not really big on, like, basketball or, you know, it's the two other sports, I feel like I was always told, like, it's kind of impossible to go D1, or it's kind of, like, it's so slim to go D1 because not many people do it. So I was always told that, like, growing up. And I think, like, my work ethic and like my perseverance, like it wouldn't allow me to just quit. Like that never crossed my mind. I was like, man, I'll go to JUCO at some point. I didn't even think about league. I didn't think about overseas. I'm like, I just know I'm going D1. I just want to be able to say I'm going D1. In hindsight, when I look at it, I'm like, bro, it's just like Division I basketball. It's just, you know, it's just college basketball. But as a kid, I was like, bro, I'm going to do this. Like, so at no point did I ever think like, nah, like I never thought, that never crossed my mind, giving up.
Yeah, when you reflect on it, like it at the end of the day, like once you get to this level, basketball is basketball. Guys don't care where you went to school at. Yeah. So it's just about getting an opportunity. But you're right, when you're a kid, it's D1 is just end all be all. D1, so then so you obviously go to Kinesis, and then your stats as a freshman were pretty modest. But then all of a sudden, your sophomore year, you're averaging 17 points a game. So what happened within those 2 years? Did your game just explode and you were a late bloomer, or how did that unfold?
So my freshman year, it was like it was me and basically my best friend, one of my best friends. We split time. He was a point guard, I was a point guard. We kind of like split time. He got 20, I got 20. And we had a bunch of like junior seniors. So that next year comes, I was really locked in. Like, I ain't gonna lie. Like, I was, what I'm on right now, I was doing that as like sophomore, because we had dudes that graduated. And I knew one of our seniors, he ended up transferring to Missouri. And I was like, oh, this is my time. Like, that two spot is going to open up. He could play the one. My best friend could play the one. I could play the two. It's up. You know what I'm saying? So going into the summer, I'm like, no, I'm going to work. I'm going to put my time into the gym. And just I stayed true to it. And then when I came into that year, we went to Canada. Started hoop. You know, you can do them like trips. Every team does them trips. We went to Canada. And that's where I feel like everybody's like, oh, yeah. Like, they could just tell. And then the season came, and then, you know, the rest is history.
What's interesting is that everyone in the British Basketball League or the British community look at you as a scoring point guard, but, like, looking back on your career, scoring isn't actually your natural instinct. Like, you a playmaker. You a pass first point guard. So do you feel like that time there really allowed you to develop on both sides?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. So, like, in high school, I played with a lot of, like talented players. And, like, one was a shooter. One was, like, a scorer. We had, like, a four-man that could, like, do everything. I had a five where I throw lobs to. So I had a lot of guys that just do it. So, and growing up, my favorite player was, like, Rondo and CP. And the things I liked about both of them was just how they passed the ball. Like, them passes were ridiculous to me. So I would just try stuff, left-hand lobs, behind the back. So growing up, that's what I liked. In hindsight, though, scoring is what matters, because I mean, at the end of the day, to me, I feel like to level up, not professionally, because you know you need there's roles, but to get to like certain levels in like college and certain high schools, you got to put the ball in the hole for the most part. So I feel like when I went to that sophomore year and all that work I put in, it just helped open up my game for real.
And indeed it did. And you talked about earlier that, you know, you weren't even thinking about the pros, anything like your focus was Division One. So while you at Kinesis, when was the moment that you thought like, okay, actually, you know, I can be a pro. I can make it to the NBA.
Right. It's a funny story, man. So after during the year when I'm like my sophomore year, I was having a good year. Since I'm not really like, since down here, it's not like a lineage or like a, you know, you got this older dude that's coming down and teaching the process of how to go to the NBA or how to go to the pro. I was just like, man, I'm just having a good year. And I'm in a room with he was a freshman at the time. He's like, hey, bro, why don't you enter your name in the draft? And I'm like, draft? Like, why, bro? I'm at a mid-major. I'm at a mid-major. I know I'm putting up numbers, but it's like, to me, it's just like, I'm at a mid-major, so there's no way the league, there's no correlation. Like, that's not going to happen. He's like, nah, bro, I'm going to enter my name. You should enter your name, too. So whatever, I was like, man, the season ended. I'm like, well, you know what, I'm gonna enter it. And when I entered it, bro, I just started getting workouts. And I was like, whoa, if it really wasn't for that moment in that room, I probably would have never did it, because I would have had nobody to tell me, like, you should do that. And I would have just went on and played my junior year, you know what I mean?
That's crazy, man. But that just goes to show, like, the importance of having, like, examples around you, because you talked about growing up in Miami, there was no one that you could really see that you can, you know, aspire towards or aspire to be like. So. Right. You know, it just goes to show you how important that is.
Exactly.
And so you finish at Kinesis, and then you move to Santa Cruz in the G League. So just talk to us a little bit about how the G League unfolded.
So yeah, man, G League ain't for everybody, man. It's like there's a lot of good players in there. My team especially, I had like 8 to 9 ex-NBA players like that were on contracts. You know what I'm saying? I know like call-ups, like real contracts. Some of them first-round draft picks, second-round real contract, you know, draft picks. Like, so when I got there, it was kind of like, I'm just this kid from, you know, Canisius for real, like coming off that year I came off my junior year. So I kind of had to, like, work my way up. And it was a blessing, though, because I would say, like, I got to learn from a lot of, like, they've been there, you know what I'm saying? So I learned a lot from everybody, just how to, like, act like a pro, how, on the court, off the court, like, all that. So that first year was definitely, like, a learning curve for me. And then that second year going to the bubble, it's kind of the same situation. You're playing, I don't know, 15, 16 games in literally a month, and they're sending, you know, the Warriors players down. So, like, Warriors players get all – they're all priority, you know what I'm saying? So if you're on a contract, two-way, you get sent down, they're getting the shots. Like, it's their team type. And then after that, it goes, like, E10s and then resumes. It's like it goes down. So, again, I had to, like, kind of work my way around. So guys ended up getting hurt, and I had opportunity to go, you know, to hoop. And then that's kind of how that happened. And I think that's how I ended up at London.
So before we move on to that, I just want to get some perspective on, obviously, the Warriors or Santa Cruz is their feeder team. So what type of connection do you guys actually have with the Warriors besides them funneling their players down? I mean, I'm thinking right now, because Clay's been hurt for so long, did he ever get sent down? Because I know he played G League games.
He might have played G League games like when he was a rookie, maybe. But to this point in his career, he's too established to even go down and play again. But when I was there, I played with Steph. He was on my team. We practiced against each other, went up and down. What's the big man's name that's at Portland that broke his leg?
Oh, the European guy.
Yeah. They sent him down. He big, bro. I didn't know how big he was. Dude was huge. But yeah, they sent him down. He went up and down. Who else did I play with? That might, obviously, like the Jordan Poole's, the Kevon Looney's, he came down. So yeah, that's how that works. They'll send them down. But also throughout the season, whenever we play like in Stockton or like we needed to take off from San Fran, the airport, we would drive up the day before, the day of, and practice at the facility. And we'll see all the guys, see the whole front office, and we'll practice there. We'll watch film, eat, and then we'll be out. I will say that the Santa Cruz and the Warriors, like that, that's one of the, I haven't been to, obviously, all the G League teams or NBA teams. But they really take care of their guys, for sure.
Man, that's crazy, man. So, obviously, Steph Curry's in the finals right now and you know, top 15 player when it's said and done. Just putting in perspective for us of how good he is. Is he really that good up close? Or what separates him from anybody else you ever seen?
So, there's one. I mean, I've seen him work out, obviously. I mean, a lot of dudes, when they work out, they kind of don't miss. But when we went up and down, he had Jonathan Simmons guarding him. And Jonathan Simmons, like, when he was in the league, was, like, known as a defender. Like, that's how he kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Stuff, you know what I'm saying? And he was playing... He was on my team, too, for the Santa Cruz Warriors. So when we're going up and down, he about at the logo, and Jay Sims is in the squad guarding him. He just da-da-da back and forth, just playing with the ball, like, trying to get, like, create a little bit of separation. Out of nowhere, he got that separation and just launched it. And it just hit nothing. But then I was looking at him and watching the whole time, and I'm just like, at that moment, I was like, oh, this dude's serious. Like, obviously, you see it on TV, but, like, when you see it right there, I was like, oh, this dude's fake. Like, because it's hard to, like, shoot contested shots when dude's right in front of you. It's not like it's a wide-open three. Like, off the dribble, too, that was nuts. That was the one play, to me, that I'll probably never forget.
No, it's tough to shoot from that far. I don't think fans realize how tough it is to shoot from that far, man. That is far. We see it a little bit into your game, and so you did 2 years at Santa Cruz, and you mentioned the London Lions. So, what ultimately came up to the decision? I need to take my talents over to Europe.
I think it really been to Europe was just like, I think it was that time. You know what I'm saying? Like, unfortunately, like the G League could have been really good for me, but it was good for me while I was there. But like, I didn't have that normal process because of the whole pandemic. Like my first year. That's when the pandemic really hit and the season ended. And then that second year, we're in a bubble. So it's like I didn't really get that time to really grow as a player. You know what I'm saying? Really, because to me, in order to grow, you have to play. And so I didn't really get that opportunity just to like, hey, go play 30 minutes for us. Like, and then every game, and obviously my game would have got better and better as the time came. So at that point, I was just like, man, it's time to go overseas, go make some money. Like, maybe if everything works out, I'll come back. And, you know, that's part of the plan. But it was just about that time.
So you signed for the London Lions. the British Basketball League. What did you know about the league? Were you agent, or did you know anybody who had played before? What did you know coming into the league about the league itself?
I knew one person that had played there, and that was Justin Gordon, because he'd be training, staying out here during summertime. So we play in pro-am together. We play like runs, a bunch of stuff. So that's probably the only thing I knew about the BBL. I didn't know anything else, like literally nothing else. But yeah, I guess my agent kind of told me like what it was, how it's viewed, or like everything. But at the end of the day, like I feel like it was a good opportunity to play in Europe. So I think that was part of the reason why it was a good decision for me to come out here.
Yeah, and I mean, you got a lot of respect out the gate. I mean, with the Sky Sports team, I think most of us besides Ant Rowe picked you to become the MVP. And obviously, you don't know the history of the league, but and I'm not sure how much you guys hear, but it was a lot. It's been a lot of noise surrounding the London Lions over the last 2 years. All of a sudden, all of this expectation is thrown upon the organization. So when you reflect upon the season, how do you view the season as far as the London Lions?
Man, to me, like, for what we came over to do for real, I think we did what we were supposed to do. Like, we qualified for a second round. We won a game in the second round. We really competed at a high level with the high-level teams. You know what I'm saying? Like, some teams that aren't even supposed to be in FIBA Euro Cup, they're really, like, Champions League teams, like, in Champions League.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, we really, really competed. It wasn't like it was no cakewalk. We got blown out once, but it wasn't no, like, oh, yeah, you're just going to win this game. Like, here, going to win by 40. No. It wasn't none of that. So, to me, we took care of business on what we were supposed to do. Now, throughout the league, it was just that part was just a long year. It was just a long year. That's all I can say.
I've been very vocal, and I put you guys' season into separate categories because, you know, first of all, I look at it from the Euro perspective, and – it was amazing, like unprecedented. You guys done something that no other team has done. I don't even think anyone in the UK expected you guys to make it through that first round, especially no one in Europe thought you guys did. So what you guys did was amazing. And
this is a true story. I got to tell it now. When we I don't know if Vince has ever said it, but when we went before the season started, like any season, we went to play games out in Greece and Serbia, and you know what I'm saying? So when we get to Greece, we went to go play AEK, which is a Champions League team. It's one of the top teams in Greece. And before the game started, the ref walked up to Vince and was like, "Oh, you guys from London? I didn't even know they played basketball out there." And when the story told to me, I was like, "Oh, I see what I'm getting." Like, if they view it like this, because I know of Greece, like I know people that play in Greece, like homies of mine, but When I got told that, I was like, oh yeah, I see how people view this. Like, so I'm sure nobody expected us to even win games in the first round, even go 5-0 or 5-1, which we really should have won that sixth game. But whatever, you know, I know nobody really expected that, but we did what we. That's why I said we did what we had to do for real.
Yeah, I mean that's crazy. So do you think for you did that add an extra amount of motivation that you wanted to put London, you wanted to put Great Britain on the map?
Man, that was one of my like, once I heard that, I was like, yeah, it's time to like show, because not only like it's part of, it's London, it's trying to like uplift it, but I'm part of this team, so like I'm not gonna be like looked at as a failure, and I don't want none of my teammates to feel like that, cause we could all hoop. So it was like, yeah, like once I heard that, I was like, yeah, we're gonna do this for sure.
Well, yeah, so like I was saying, when we talk about Europe, it ain't no question, ain't no doubt about it. You guys have done something that nobody else has done. But then when I look at the other category from the BBL, I say it's a failure only because I judge things off a trophy. I know everybody don't judge it like that. I only judge it like that because I came up through Newcastle and we won everything and we were dominant for so long. And that's how we were judged. Like, if we lost the game, everybody went crazy. So I just put that same accountability on you guys. So, like, watching you guys in Europe and then watching you guys in the BBL, and there's been a lot of stuff saying of why you guys – I want to hear from your perspective. Was it that you guys were just fatigued, or did you guys – was it tough for you guys to play one of these top European teams and then go to Surrey? Why was it that you think that when it came to the BBL, you dropped your standard as a team?
I think like everything you just said is everything, but it definitely is hard, especially like with some of the Americans who we've played against, like, you know what I'm saying, like from a team standpoint to player individual player standpoints, like, so you play a top level team in Europe, you know what I'm saying, and you, this dude's played here and this dude's played there, and like that's where you aspire to be, and then like we competing like at a high level, and then we come over here and there's a big you know, just this is small, but like just the floors, like you have to have the proper floors to be able to, you know, to even participate in FIBA, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, yeah, that's the normal. I'm used to playing on regular wood floors, but it's just little stuff like that like it kind of brings down, like, man, should I even be playing this? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, is it even as serious? So I'm sure that played a part, but like I said, bro, it was a long season, like from three coaches to, you know, man, there's a lot that went on. So I think all that like played a part in it, for real.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's hard, man. And you're absolutely right. So actually I put it into three categories, because I look at it from the European adventure to the BBL as far as like performance. And then another category, I look at it as standards. And when I think of you guys from a standards standpoint, is that, you know, you guys are at a level that everybody should aspire to get to. I just feel like when you look at the entire picture, there's a lot of little things that could be done so much better. Just stuff like social media. And I've seen you actually say, so I think you said something about, I've been here for 9 months and you can't even spell my name right. So it's just stuff like, yeah, I caught that. So it's just stuff like that within the organization that I feel like need to be cleaned up, because we're depending on the Lions to set the standard for everybody else to keep up to, about all those little things that you just mentioned.
Yeah. No, yeah. They definitely need to set the standards. You know what I'm saying? I feel like the ownership, like, this is their team, so it's supposed to start here and go down. But it has to be, like, to me, the whole league. You know what I'm saying? Like, it has to be as a whole, because that's how you really, like, obviously,
yeah,
we could set the standards from a basketball standpoint, but to really uplift the whole league, it has to be everybody. It can't just be one team. Because I'm saying, like, when you come to our games, like, that, to me, when teams will come to our games, I'm sure they're like, oh, let's play. Like, because you could just get that feeling.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? People are trying to come and watch the game, like a real, like, entertainment feeling, like, let's go put on a show. So, like I said, it has to be across the whole board for it to really work. Got to be, like, unite, you know what I'm saying?
You're absolutely right. And that's why, you know, that's why I set that, those three categories. And it is time for everybody to start lifting their standards. And speaking on that, we just saw Sheffield Sharks break ground today on their arena. We need more teams with their own arena.
Yeah.
And just like all the little things that fans don't see, that as players, that is just that, especially coming from America, we just got expectations. Like a little thing like playing on wood floors, like that's got to be a standard.
Yeah.
You know? Like playing on these mats that's slippery, you know, it's frustrating.
From it, bro, like it ain't like, especially playing at Sheffield, when I seen J. Rob and Johnson, right? I can't remember.
Antoine Johnson.
Yeah, when I seen both of them get hurt, I was just like, man, I swear when that happened, I know like the things went down, because guys are like, man, like obviously we're still playing, but it's like, yo, we just seen two crazy injuries just happen. Like, how hard do you really want to go? Like,
let me make sure that I get out of here safe.
Yeah,
basically, I made it this far.
The same way you came in. So yeah, just stuff like that, man. It just, which I know is gonna happen, because I from what I've been told coming in like the last 2-3 years, like things have trended in a certain direction. So I know in due time it's gonna happen, and I have real like high expectations for the BBL, for real.
Yeah, so let's just talk about yourself. You had an amazing year. Obviously, you didn't win the MVP like we all expected to, but you had an amazing season. And I feel like really the turning point for you in regards to the British Basketball League is when you got hurt, when you pulled, I think you had a hamstring injury. And when you came back, you just totally took your game to a whole nother level. So you talked about the season being long, so maybe just getting a chance to hit the pause button really helped you. But one thing that's good about this show is that, you know, players get to tell their own story and tell their own perspective. Myself and Jay, a lot of times we're giving educated guesses and we're speculating. And the same thing on Sky Sports. And it's one thing that I said in regards to you, and I don't know if you saw it or not or heard it, but I said, I think it was when you guys were playing Glasgow, I said, the only person that can guard Isaiah Reese is Reese. And if he had the mindset that he was the best player in this league, then there's nobody that can touch him. So I want you to give me how you feel about that statement. Is it accurate? Is it inaccurate? Whatever. What's your initial thoughts on that statement?
No, I mean, that's as accurate as it gets. I mean, I think it's not even BBL. Just like I stop myself for real. Whenever I just get out of my own head and just kind of just play hoop for real and just want to just hoop. Like I could be very, very good. I remember J-Rod told me that one time. He's like, man, you don't know how good you could be. But he's just like, you could stop yourself sometimes. And like, that's real. Like, just like both of y'all said, that really is real. I don't think anybody could guard me. And I think in the flow of the game, I'm playing. So yeah, it is hard. But yeah, that's pretty accurate, bro.
The thing is, I mean, you're still young in your career and you know, as you continue to be a pro, the biggest thing that you learn is that people got a short memory, man. And it's easy if you have a great game, the next game to just be like, I'm good. You know, yeah. I made it. But like, that's the whole purpose of the program. You got to have the mindset that you have to prove it all over again every single night. So that's a great lesson to learn while you're young.
Nah, for sure. Nah. It's funny because I was talking to my homie today on the way back from the gym. And he seen, because somebody had posted that I averaged like 20 in the league, or like it was one of them posts where they showed like every country and who led the top three scores. And he's like, man, some games you didn't even want to play for real. And I was just like, yeah. When I look back at it, I'm like, yeah. Because like, obviously when I was in London, we would be on the phone. So he would know how I feel. And I was just like, yeah, but I really could have averaged like 23 to 25, maybe changed some games, won some games for real if I would have just like, wasn't on and off, that would it, like, if it was just on the whole time, but yeah, it could have got real scary for sure.
Well, I mean, it ain't, when you look at it, that's just for you. You should go into the offseason with a lot of confidence, because if you can average 20, lead the league, if you could be first team BBL and have the success you have in Europe, and knowing that you didn't completely leave it out there every single time, then man, that should give you a boatload of confidence going into your summer.
I will say, because it might sound bad, like we just said that, but towards the end of the season, going to the playoffs, I definitely left it out there. Let's put that out there.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. And yeah, so let's touch on that. So the playoff final, we got the matchup that we wanted. We got you guys versus the Leicester Riders, who's been consistent off the board. I think you guys, is, you know, man for man, might be a little bit more talented, but it was clear from the very start that the Leicester Riders, just like the whole package, they're just better, you know, when you look at the organization, when you look at the whole picture. And so, I mean, that final gave us everything that we wanted, everything we needed, and it was amazing. And then, I mean, you, of course, I mean, you balled out. So, I mean, what's your reactions to that game? Did it play out exactly how you thought it would?
No, honestly, I thought we was going to win that game. And we really should have won that game. I will say, Rob got this, like, intimidation badge on him. It's a Hall of Fame badge. Because them refs, he look at a ref away, he say something, they quick to blow that whistle. I'm telling the fans, but I told Rob, I went up to Rob, somebody was at the free throw line, I think it was Gino, and I'm talking to Rob, I'm like, hey, Rob, you got an intimidation factor on you, bro. He's like, no, I haven't even said anything. I'm like, yeah, you don't have to say anything. And the ref was like, nah, I'm not, like, he don't pay attention to that. But I'm just like, man, that first half, they just getting every call. They shot like 17 free throws in the first half. So, I mean, that's probably the one thing that kind of bothered me the most. But like you said, it gave the fans, everybody, what it was supposed to be. It was a close game to the end. And like I said, we should have won, but kudos to them, man. They won. They played better.
Well, I'll challenge you on this. Aren't you supposed to use that to your advantage? Right now, we look at Draymond Green. He out there playing tackle football, and it's clear that he get a lot more rope than everybody else. So, isn't that the whole? Isn't that about basketball playing the game?
Yeah. No, Rob did what he's supposed to do. Like you're supposed to. Like, if you got that pull, you're supposed to use it for sure. I ain't blaming him, but it's just like, man, that game could have went a little different. You know, 17-5, we go to halftime down 7. If it's tie game, it's a different game now. Going into halftime, it's a different game.
So let's get your perspective off. It's a 3-point game. I can't even remember now if it was 2.5 seconds or whatever's left on the clock. You guys need a 3 to tie. And, you know, I talked about this right after. I love the idea of the play because we ran something very similar against London City Royals a couple years ago. My only pushback to it is that I didn't like the fact that you were taking out the ball.
Yeah.
So now that we can reflect on it, I mean, what was your thoughts in the moment when you knew that you, when coach is drawing a play up and you're taking out the ball?
I mean, I came in and I say, hey, let me, I need this. I said, I'm going to hit this shot when I came in. But I think because of the time, it was 2.5 on the clock, he felt like whatever action what I was involved in, I was just going to get double teamed, which probably would have happened. So I guess that play was the best thing he could, they drew up, they came together and drew up. And it would have worked for real. I just, that pass, like overhead pass, got to work on that, man. I got to work on that.
Yeah. I think if I put it in just a little bit. Oh, so it didn't get deflected?
No, it didn't. It didn't. I just put it short because I really should have put it in the air before anybody even moved. Like, before dudes got to moving and set the screen, I should have just let it fly. Then they pinned in. He probably went back, got the ball, hit the shot, or at least got a shot attempt. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think it was a bad play. I did want it, though. I mean, regardless, I don't care if I'm triple teamed. I wanted to at least get the ball and put it up there. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, we won with that play. I throw a bad pass, and Gino took it, and they won the game.
Yeah, and speaking of Gino, what's your thoughts on him? He was named a two-time MVP. And, I mean, you didn't get to see him last year. Last year, he put on a show.
Yeah.
He was a showstopper. This year he was a lot more just solid. What's your thoughts on his game and matching up against him? What makes him so good?
Did they bring back the same team?
No, they didn't have Patrick Whelan. They just had Zach Jackson, and they had Nelson Henry. So Mark Levin was new, and then Patrick Whelan, and then who else was new?
They had Corey
on that starting line. Yeah, they had Corey Johnson. Yeah,
Corey Johnson. Yeah. Okay, because I'm just trying to see, like, why was he, like, 1 year a showstopper, and then next year you're telling? Because this team was pretty well rounded, if you ask me. Like, as far as like, you got a shooter. You got guys that's going to put their head down, get to the rim. Like, everybody can kind of, you know, Connor's going to come off, start shooting. Like, to me, they're well-rounded. But, yeah, Gino's tough, man. I mean, some of the stuff he was doing, like, especially in traffic, like dribbling the ball, I was kind of like, damn, bro, like, it's pretty impressive. I'm not going to lie. he definitely could go, for sure.
Yeah, no, what I mean by that is what you just said. He just didn't need to do all of that this year because they were so well-rounded and solid. Last year, he'd be pulling rabbits out of his hat. So, and it was always on social media because every weekend he was making a spectacular play. So that's what I mean by that. He just wasn't required to do that.
Yeah, at all.
But
at
you know, he was still silent.
At all.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, as we wrap this thing up, obviously you're back in the heads in the off season. So, what was your exit interview with the London Lions, and what's next for Isaiah Reese?
It went well. I mean, we spoke about the season and what we've done, what we accomplished. And just as far as next year, just like I said, one day at a time. Just going to keep working out, see what offers come in, and just make the best decision. For real.
Yeah, I mean, I know for you, getting a little taste of that European experience, that definitely got to give you some hunger to really want to play, put your game on a different level, right?
Yeah, I definitely, that's where I see myself playing. That's the side I'm leaning towards. But like I said, like, I just got to see how all the offers that come in and see, like I said, make the best decision.
Well, cool. Well, you mentioned off air that you was getting your work in out there. You're getting your two a day. So besides your overhead passes, what else is there that you need to work on? What do you focus on this summer?
Man, I just really want to exchange my, like, I know I shoot far already, but I kind of just want to make it, like, more consistent. Like, dudes got to come up and check me when I cross half court. So with my trainer now, we've been just pull up in transition, pick and roll, just improving on it. Even though, I know if you've seen the stats, I didn't know it was that good. That's pretty impressive. I'm probably the hardest person on myself, and I was like, damn, that's pretty tough. Like, but just keep working, man. Just keep perfecting what I'm good at, and then, you know, work on finishing different left hand, right hand finishes, just different finishes, because the higher up you go, the more athletic guys get, the, you know, taller people are. So play through contact, stuff like that, just working on all that type of stuff.
Well, that's awesome, man. Well, we definitely are blessed to be able to witness your talent this year, and we wish you all the best moving forward. And we hope to see you playing a higher level and continue to get to follow your career. So, you know, thanks for your time today, coming on the show, and we'll be following you, man. Good luck.
No doubt. Appreciate that, Drew.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Keep grinding. I'll catch up with you later. Appreciate your time, man.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Lasker, for holding it down. As I said, our schedules will be crazy, so from time to time, you'll see both of us going one-on-one with our guests. Remember, this is the summer road trip. We're very open. We're very flexible. Tell us who you want to see. Who do you want to hear from? Which direction do you want to go in? As you said, we are all over the place. Drew is stateside right now. I'm in Plymouth at the moment. Let's see what comes up in the next episode. Drew, lead us out.
Yes, indeed. Fans, like Jay mentioned, get involved. We want your assistance. We want to please you. So whoever you want to get on the show, just let us know and we'll try our best to get them on. But, you know, Jay and I will be moving around in different locations. However, you know, we'll be constant. The BBL show, same place, same time here on the show.
The show. Thanks for listening to the BBO Show. The BBO Show is a 21 Media original podcast produced by Corey Mallory with your host, Jay Marriott and Drew Lasker. Keep up to date with the show by following the BBO on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, where you can find details on future episodes, events, and fan interaction. Until next time.